all that work. Just gonna put this little thing up here.
Put it on. Leave it. Leave it. Let's look. Yeah.
I felt that Chris, that's us all up there.
Well, see, now his insides are claiming author. Is that not true? Now, tell her about why you made the sculpture as you did. You had a strategic concern, because you've been through this assignment before, and you didn't make something that was not to be tampered with. You made something that would avail itself of anybody's creative action, right? But tell her what the concern was.
The problem that I had with it, in fact, the piece wanted to write a letter to whoever it was going to work on and tell us how to do work done. I felt that was cheating to do that, but really, it could have written a letter to go with it that would have said, I want you to throw, I want you to shake me.
Carve me
this
up.
This is the uncarved block. This was never intended, and it's interesting that you projected the image of perfection into that block. And that it was something not to be tampered with, because to me this is truly a gift. The only thing that was really creative about that whole piece was the fact that I had the color in it. And otherwise it was just plaster of Paris in an oatmeal box in that shape, ready for somebody to start doing something.
So where she saw this as perfection, don't touch, you meant tamper well.
Yes.
Well, you see, that's interesting, because the way that she worked with it is still consonant with the way that you would have wanted somebody to work with it. So what she did was already highly intelligible to you, which is why, you know, the humor, because you saw the irony. She worked with it in the way you had hoped somebody would work with it, but in an external way. Now look here, right? I hate to be esoteric about all this, but sometimes it is. Your sculpture was in the womb of your idea. She gave birth to it, but in a way not consonant with it being in your womb. This sculpture is now held in the embrace of the further amplification, but didn't get born out of your idea. Look here how important it is to allow the other person, or any other person, the freedom of their ideas about what you're doing. They can't work in their lives out of your ideas of what you're up to. Now that is a great lesson in humility, right there. That even though you may have very coherent ideas about yourself and who you are, you can't chide somebody else because they don't work on that basis with you. So, what is the concern here? The concern is, don't just settle for those nice ideas about yourself. Put those ideas into play in your life so that they have more to work with. They have your life to work with, and not just the closed but perfect, seemingly perfect hints of the ideas. I bring that little moral up because you can see that it goes a long way for everyone. It so happens that the way that you work with this is exactly the way that he hoped somebody would work with it. Only he was thinking in terms of opening up the inside. He put stuff in the inside and everything.
No, I knew he wanted me to, but I didn't want to go into the
I love it. I love it.
No, that's good. Because it was a trap.
Yeah, you set a trap, and she gilded your trap and put it in her own work.
My first piece had a legitimate history.
Yes.
I thought oatmeal was going to come out.
Yeah. I love it. Juan Ramon Jimenez said, if they give you ruled paper, write the other way.
But somehow with a little person on it, the whole thing balances out. Because it has no humanity in it the way it is. It's too ethereal, but somehow it's sitting there wiping that little humunculus on the top, having a good time and hearing it again.
But when you gave it to me, you didn't act like you wanted the humanity in it then.
So I expected you to open it up and put it in to either bring the humanity out or to have the humanity reflected inside. And that's what we're focused on.
Very good. Well, let's set it on the table and let's put on the stand, if we can, the tray of green volumes.
No. The only form that, I'm sorry to talk about your piece, but just since it was from my perspective, the only form that fell was the one of the two embracing. From a vertical to a horizontal. So that kind of gives some kind of...
Well, let's leave him alone.
Okay, right. So we have this another figure up here trying to, view the whole thing.
Okay, who's responsible for all this? And who worked on it? You worked on it? Okay.
Well, I don't really have anything to say very much. The piece that I got from Don certainly looks very metallic similar. And I was sitting in a chair playing around with it. And lo and behold, 9 people on their
This is a birth myth.
In different attitudes.
They're setting as a, is that a pie tin? This is a pie of people. A 9-part pie of people. Usually a pie you slice in 8, but this one came out.
Well, the little one hanging on the edge there with the left over there, so.
Yes. I say it's as esoteric as you can get. It's wonderful. The little one looks sort of like Popeye's child sweet pea. From here, is it formed?
Oh, they're all formed. They have no faces. They have no faces. They're all formed.
They're the burgers of L.A. What is that material anyway? Modeling clay.
It's interesting when it goes in one piece, the color looks much darker. It almost looks like a gray.
Well, the forms accept more light.
Is it a family, or is it very significant?
I didn't really put any significance into the forms, other than they each have a different attitude. And I reviewed that it was a little child in the middle, and then I thought that was getting too long.
You had the 7.
8. I had the 8 in the circle. It was the 9th
in
child.
The
in
I see.
The
okay, so it was kind of like a mandala. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And then you abstracted the child from the center and put him on the
hanging
rim.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
Yeah, that abstract process, so that life could go on and it could fall off.
I don't know if you remember what I said when I brought the piece of clay in, but I had this piece of clay and I just, put my hands to it and it had any different shapes and just kind of said, well, that's enough of this today, and put it back and said, well, I'll bring it in today because I have another week to work on this by myself, and I'll just kind of set it here and... Let it kind of absorb, just to be with the other work and all these personalities, from that piece, I didn't have to take it any further. Thank you, Lord. And I'm surprised that there's so much that, from the small piece.
That's a double compliment.
Yeah.
What we have another sculpture up there that is of clay. Let's put that on the stool and see what we've and whose is this and whose was it? That's right.
I like the back. I like the whole thing. It's very interesting to think it around.
Let's do that now. Let's turn it exactly 180 degrees. And everybody can.
Now that's the
okay. Okay. Yes. Again, 9 and 1 out. Yeah, but similar to Lois's form.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I thought of doing a circle before I did it that way, and then I decided to get it. But it's interesting that he didn't see the shape I saw.
Yeah.
So, again, when I was doing this, I was thinking, it's so interesting, everyone will see different shapes.
Before we go to that, though, let's bring into ideation the very powerful insight that both you and Lois have that is constant with the material here. You're absorbing it by osmosis very deeply. If you have those 9 arranged in a circle, that's like that old Egyptian eternal return. That geometricity is very formal and doesn't admit of abstraction except in just one way. The only way out of that is the center. The only way out of a circle of eternal return is through the center. In Dante's Inferno, the only way out of hell is to go to the center of it. Which is why it's such a terrifying journey. Is the one place one doesn't want to go. But that's what keeps you in hell. Is that you will not go to the only exit at the center. This will keep you in fear. Is you will not challenge it exactly where it comes together. The realization of why I am afraid. But to arrange those nails in the way that you said. And the way Lois arranged her figures. That is not a circle. It's not geometricity. It's an abstract arrangement called, incidentally, in higher mathematics, a matrix. The way out of the matrix is to work with it in any way that you want. Notice the power of an abstract matrix over geometricity. Geometricity is very powerful, and it's the strongest symbolic structure of the mythic level. But the matrix in abstract consciousness is asymptotically more powerful. You think symbols and myths are powerful? Ha! Try consciousness with matrices. You have an incredible capacity to do what you want to do. So both you and Lois, intuitively, through the integrity of your persons, have already expressed this very powerfully just in your very work. So I wanted to draw that out so you could appreciate, how how uncanny it is when you're dedicated. All of you have a lot of dedication to do this. Not many people can do this. You learn in ways in which you didn't realize you were learning. You appropriate for yourself in ways, and that's what's important. Not that I am bringing them out as ideas constantly and you're taking notes or something. That's one thing. That's instruction. Who cares? None of us really care about that. But that you're able in your own play, in your own compass, in your own life, to come to this independently. Then if I draw these ideas out, they are just to confirm what already you have a feel for. That's legitimate. That's education. That's a different thing. So thank you.
So if we're reflecting, very important part of what I'm doing all the time to see it. And then I had a feeling of integration of the bird as the symbol of the animal, also color. And the fact that the kind of it came out alone. I don't know, I didn't meant to do it this way. I'm not at some point of the word the image of a medieval.
Let's turn it 90 degrees and just give yet another perspective. Yeah. A little bit more, Jerry. How are you feeling about it?
Oh, I like it. It was thrilling to watch what you had done with it.
It's amazing, though, isn't it, that from the kind of sketchy energy that you began with, look what has evolved.
Yeah.
I mean, that is itself quite a process. Have we another sculpture there on the table? Have we another sculpture? We better get to that. Let's get to the redhead.
We're both together.
Was the plate a part of your sculpture?
No.
Well, come on, artist.
Yeah. I've been mainly looking at what Walter did to mine. I really like it. But
had you set your head over next to this one?
Yeah.
You put the heads together.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, when I first was given Robert, I thought it was so curious that I would in this sort of random process of assigning art works that I would get something similar, quite similar to what I was working on. That is, a head about the same size out of the.
Now Carol wasn't here last week. What was that head originally?
Oh, that was a devil. Pretty convincing mischievous looking devil with small horns and I didn't do anything on it until late last night. I was thinking, now how can I somehow change it and yet retain some of the devilish aspects of it, or somehow change it, but incorporate some of the essence of the devil with it. And I ended up, I thought, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with it. I'm just going to move the features around and try to make it less devilish somehow. And, so I gave it kind of, I gave it earlobes that are sort of like, I started to try to make it more saintly or something. So I just, and all I, and when I thought of
you like saintly devils.
A repentant devil.
So, I, the eyes are, it has the diamond-like eyes.
Are those diamonds?
That are really distinctive aspects of the devil or something. I didn't, I wanted to leave those. And, so I just pressed, you know, the features in different ways.
Robert, how do you feel towards this particular work?
I like the transition, the movement of the ears into the higher level of hearing.
Oh, yes.
Of sound being very important. And then, in a way, losing the forehead, losing that the high intellectual, and then coming down into the facing forward, the dynamic nose being solid and like a plow, just going to face.
A Roman nose.
Yeah. And then the chin also, sticking the chin out, being a little more aggressive and assertive. And then the wisdom that comes from a bald face. Very impressive.
And the way in which the horns transformed into ears. Mm-hmm. But carried into the jut of the jaw.
Mm-hmm.
So the assertiveness of the horns is there, but translated into physiology. And the ears, consonant with that, are able to receive what the horns are able to give.
Right.
But the jaw is able to hold that tension together. So he did an excellent job with it.
Changing the devil, I look at as an illusion, into the process of growth, the reality, as the face changes, as it matures, the illusions drop away.
Yes, as the face, as someone's face comes into focus, the shadows become highlights of the face and not opposite powers. Yeah. Okay, this head. Let's put this head up. You laugh? What? How do you feel? How do you feel? Yeah.
I love you, Mary. I'm going to kiss. That's my
fault. Let's turn it 180 degrees so she can get a chuckle. Yes.
Oh my God, what am I going to do with it? And almost as soon as I uttered some of the words, I said, I can see that the figure was a poet, with all the sadness and everything in him, he has a hell of a lot to express. And I was going to work on him, and I was also going to write a poem. When I got up on Sunday morning, I went out to get my car, and this house was broken into. The third time in 4 months, and I said, oh, shit. So I went out to Rockland on Nevada before the day to escape, and I ended up being out in that area for 4 days. I had...
You weren't arrested.
...down in my car, no.
Oh, okay.
And I had to wait for the parts and other things, so I was out in that area for 4 days, and then by the time I got home, I wasn't able to complete a poem, but anyhow, I altered him a little bit so that he more of more of a positive figure than when I saw him.
First. He's positively bon voyant.
Expressing himself now.
And you have a poem from him?
Well, I don't have a poem from him. I didn't have the time to complete one.
How do you feel, Ed, towards this object of desire?
Okay.
Turn it 90 degrees.
I mean, maybe it does look a little like a picture of E.E. Cummings, I think. I just like it. I sort of a hobo, a noble hobo kind of. It's hard to find words in every piece.
A noble hobo?
Yeah, what?
That's
hobo?
Our next brand name.
He's just kind of sort of self-satisfied and really absorbed and concentrated on something, and he's just kind of really concentrated on something which is insignificant, and yet there's something great about being so concentrated about it, and it's like. You know, it's like the fool, and I can't really decide whether it's the fool at the beginning or at the end. You know, he's just stepping off into the abyss to fall to his death, or is he stepping off just to float? You know, continue floating on indefinitely. There was this. Seriousness, there's just the playfulness about it.
Whereas
it's an improvement over the sodden. I mean,
before it was sodden, and now it's
just, yeah.
Blythe.
Yeah, it's just not the features haven't been changed, just the addition of the smoke and pasta and blonde hair.
It's interesting because the only person that ever smoked cigarettes in that way was FDR. Let's have the next sculpture.
And he's not a hobo.
No, a noble hobo. Let's have the next one.
I'll show this around.
Oh, good.
This is Dada's sculpture. And since she took the time to present it in this fashion, in a box, that I'd work on it within its own
element. It was basically very chunky, more square, and close to the shape. Basically what I did was create a level of consciousness here, place a little water to consciousness, and then pull away for it to leak. And then because of the channels, if there was physical water in there, you would move your consciousness around and pour, and then it would be able to flow wherever it went. Different depths, different heights, and then smoothed it out much more than it was, and then of course made the holder. Also left it like this, I would have gone part of I wanted to just raise it up more, give it more height and dimension, except Roger said that we're going to be redoing it, someone else was going to do it, so I left it sort of in whatever form it is.
You didn't bake it?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't paint it.
Very good. And Donna's not here, so we'll we'll pass on to the next one. This one.
What?
Is that yours? Your sculpture?
Oh, yes. Okay. Well, I haven't exchanged it with anyone, and it's in pretty bad condition because I dropped it on my way here this morning. So, but don't you want to wait until it's been exchanged?
Well, let's just show it around for a little bit, and then we're going to exchange, but let's just see the work.
Well, as I said, I dropped it. It was a blossom. And
now it's a squash blossom.
There were leaves coming out here. Oh, it's still falling
apart. Just show it around. Yeah. Can everyone see it?
An idea.
Carol can't.
Well, there's not too much to look at this point.
Okay, let's set it on the stool and out in front, because I'm going to give that away first. Now we are going to give all of these works one more time and see what obtains. Now, the cue here is that when you do this the first time, there's a kind of attention which has to be respected and explored. And the last thing that comes into play is a compositional idea. You may have a compositional idea, but it takes a back seat to the respect for someone else's work, to the problematical of not knowing what to do, and so on and so forth. But the second time around, the compositional idea will come to the fore. Consciousness will take the lead and only be informed and modified by the other considerations rather than being led with them. Now, consciousness in this form is very, very powerful. It's foresight. Consciousness in this form is foresight. So that this next sculpture, this next revision that you're going to be working with, try and do what Linda did. Make some notes in some kind of a sequence of how this happened. Because what we're trying to do here is disclose to ourselves the process. The sculptures are interesting, but the process is really what we would like to be conscious of. How is this happening is the cue. So you want to write that down for yourself in some way or other. How is this happening? Those notes will help you to make the mask. Remember that this mask is not a ritual mask now, but a conscious mask of some role that you are forced to play in your life. Well, let's not put it that harshly. Some role that you have to play, that you in fact do play in your life. Some role. You're a mother to someone. You're a father to someone. You work in a job. You're in this kind of a situation, whatever it is, some role. So the notes on this next phase of modifying the sculpture will disclose to you the process by which your foresight operates. So now we'll pass these out. Molly's sculpture, we'll go to the sixth person from Jerry, whoever that is. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It goes to Dolores.
When do we have to have this?
About 3 weeks.
3 weeks from now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, can we add something to it?
You can do whatever you want.
Right. Because I thought it was only going to be passed once, and I didn't, I mean, this is all so loose.
I know. No, it's fine. It's fine. No. You do the mask.
And then you do the mask.
You do the mask concomitantly with this, but the mask is not, we don't bring those in until late June. Now, what I'm trying to do for the mask is to help you to be very conscious of the mask. Notice that everything that I'm saying here is, now don't be in a rush with the mask. be conscious of it. This mask is different from a ritual mask. The juxtaposition is so powerful that there's even a wonderful volume on Euripides that was published a little while ago by Cornell University Press, Ritual Irony in Euripides, Poetry and Sacrifice in Euripides, Ritual Irony. There's an ironic sense that this mask will have that no mask in ceremonial ritual has ever had. One of the keys to freedom for a mature human being caught in a role is to have a sense of irony as a seed towards developing perspective. One of the very first senses that you get as an actor is a sense that you can go into the role and you're not going to be lost. You can go into the role as deeply as you need to, and you will go into the role. Role's not going to swallow you up. The seed for that confidence is the sense of irony. Now, the famous irony that Euripides had, his ritual irony, which is not there in Sophocles. Sophocles is famous for equilibrium. Sophocles he lived to be 90 and he was godlike. He was in perfect equilibrium all the time. Smooth as Sophocles. But Euripides is always off-center, always ironical. He's always the James Dean of the lot. He's always realizing as he's writing beautiful language out that there's some shit in here. He always has this kind of a sense that's attenuated consciousness. The reason for this is that he has emerged completely from the ritual mythic realm. And he can't go back. For him to go back is ironical. For him to have to write plays about the gods is ironical. And you see, there's a whole difference. So the mask that you're making now is going to have an irony to it. The generation of Euripides that was taught about irony were taught by Socrates. Socratic irony is the first beginnings of it in classical Greek. Soren Kierkegaard has a wonderful book on Socratic irony. He's one of the great appreciators of that. The irony of Socrates is the beginning of philosophic perspective. In other words, before you have irony, you have just your set of beliefs. The Greek word for it was doxa, and it meant opinion. That was your opinion. But when you entered into dialogue with other people about your opinion, you learned that they might have totally different opinions from you. And that might lead you to modify your opinion so that you move from your opinion, from doxa, to a modified opinion, and because you have modified your original bullheadedness into a new state, the new state was more or less tentative, amenable to further revision on the basis not just of comparison of opinions, but on going deeper into the truth of the matter in terms of the structure of opinion making as a process. So that philosophy moved from opinions to formed opinions to a deeper thing of understanding that there are principles in opinion making which one needs to take into consideration. Therefore, one's consciousness climbs two levels above the naive. And then Plato and the Socratic dialogue shows that from that third level, one can see that there are eternal truths. There are principles which are always in play that you may not have brought into play, but certainly could be. That higher, fourth level, the Greek word for was aletheia, and that was truth. One moved from opinion to truth by a series of transformations. The ecology of the whole process was a four-part process, beginning with doxa and concluding with aletheia. So that there is this tremendous sense of the ability to educate yourself. Plato's name for that education process for the individual is therapeia. That's what a therapy is. To learn that you can educate yourself, to teach yourself how you learn, and then to proceed to learn, to teach yourself how to be free to learn more. The most important thing that you can learn is not some content about something, but the technique of training yourself to learn. You can learn how to learn, and that's the very first thing to find out. That path of learning how to learn is tutoring yourself to come into play in your life. Now you can see how powerful this is. The realization of this, if you can commandeer it as your own thoughts and apply it in your own life, is like adding a dynamo to oneself. So this next process, you want to be able to note down now the process of changing this sculptural form. Remember Henry Moore, one of the keys of sculpture is its tactility. Especially if you're the sculptor, if you're working with it, you have to put the hands on. So your experience, your tactile experience with the work, with the changing process, is a key. And when you come to disclose to yourself your sense of irony about making forms and changing them, don't omit how you touch things. Not just naively, how you touch them, like gingerly or firmly, but in a metaphorical, philosophic sense. How do you approach and contact the world? That is of interest. That's of great moment and concern to us now. The style by which you approach and contact the world to interplay with it, that should be made conscious. Whatever it is, and there, I must say to you, there should be no embarrassment. However your style is appropriate to you. That is your style. We want to disclose what actually happened. All of us are mature enough. It's not going to embarrass anybody. You can let it come out in this kind of situation, however you are. The fact that Lois is playing with this phallus-shaped clay, and nine people come out of this. It is an aesthetic event, and there's no moral embarrassment. At least there wasn't, until I made it conscious. Now she's pinker than her clothes. Okay, let's give these sculptures away. Yes?
Now this sculpture that I'm getting, it's only been worked on once.
You're going to work on it, and then we're going to give it to somebody else. Okay. You're going to work on it.
What's left of it.
What's left of it. Okay, Dolores' sculpture goes to the ninth person, starting from Molly. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Oh, no.
All right, you get the right to give your sculpture away. Who gets this to work on? Walter.
Walter, right.
Walter.
The last one that you worked on.
Yeah, the big one. Okay.
Now, do I go home with the base now?